of the first things people notice when they attend a Unity church, when they're new to Unity, is we so often refer to God as Mother Father in our services. Now, this is a tradition that goes back to the 19th century. It's something we've been doing almost from the beginning, and I can't think of a better time than Mother's Day to explain why we refer to God in that way. Now, we don't talk about God as Father, Mother in an effort to be politically correct. Rather, we do it in an attempt to be spiritually or theologically accurate. Because those two parent figures in our lives and as ideals very much represent the two sides of the one God that we perceive in this life experience. The Father side of God is represented by what Moses revealed to us. Moses introduced us in a way to the Father kind of God. He introduced us to the concept of God as a lawgiver. And that was just a vast and profound new way of thinking about God. Because what that implies is that God is not capricious. God is not an angry deity whose anger we don't understand, that must be placated, as some more ancient religions believed. But God is the creator of law. Law is God's nature. What a wonderful thought. What it means is you can count on God. God is consistent. God is reliable. God is dependable. God is as reliable and consistent as the law of gravity, the principles of mathematics. Indeed, people like Pythagoras, like Euclid, perceived in the laws of mathematics and geometry the hand of God. People like Kepler saw the hand of God in the movement of the spheres. Many 18th century thinkers saw God in the intricate workings of nature, in the way everything always fit in order. And when things seem random, the understanding that they're not really. There is some law, there is some principle at work. That is the foundation of our science. This is a truly elevated way of looking at the universe. And it's also liberating in the sense that, as it says in Acts, it means God is no respecter of persons. God does not treat one person better than another because of their status in life, because of what organization they belong to. If God is law, God treats everyone the same, is the same yesterday, today, and forever for every one of us. God is as consistent with us as math. Our gravity. You know, commoners don't fall any harder than kings. And princes don't get any easier a time on the math quiz than paupers. And even so, this idea helps us to understand that God is the same with all of us. Now, that's a great idea, but here's its limitation. That understanding of God as law, the limitation is it can make you begin to think the universe is just sort of this giant machine. And God is sort of the grand mechanic, the architect that designed this machine, the clockmaker that put together this clockwork universe, but that's God's whole job. Our job is everything else. We have to figure out where our cog fits in the mechanism. We have to understand how the machinery works, and if we don't, well, God didn't do anything wrong. We just didn't understand the law. We just don't understand the principle. In other words, it may not be our sin, but it's still all our fault. And this mechanical understanding of the universe also, well, it can leave you kind of cold. It can leave you feeling just like one cog in a giant machine. It can make God seem distant, uncaring, mechanical. Well, God is law. That is true, just as Moses revealed. But God is more. The something more that Jesus revealed. As it's expressed in the first chapter of the Gospel of John, the law came from Moses, but grace, which means unearned, even undeserved favor and blessing, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. And the grace and truth is this: God gives law, but God is love. Just as John writes in the fourth chapter of his first epistle, God gives law, but God is love. This universe might work according to principles, but love is the first principle of the universe. And in our human experience, nowhere is this divine love, which is the very core principle of everything, nowhere was this divine love more clearly demonstrated for us than in the spirit and ideal of motherhood. In the Orthodox and Catholic branches of the Christian family tree, you see this expressed in the way the status of and reverence for Notre Dame, Our Lady, the Blessed Virgin, Mary, the mother of Jesus, grows through the centuries. Because in the Bible, Mary is barely mentioned. In the early church, they don't talk about her. But Mary adds something to the mix, something to the spiritual experience that is missing. And so her status and her influence, the reverence for her grows until by the 19th century, well, she's almost more appealing to appeal to in prayer than God the Father or Jesus the Son. And what's the reason? Because in that maternal spirit we see reflected in Mary, we find something that is more approachable, something that can understand our pain and our fear. Something that you can kind of warm up to in a way that the way God the Father and even Jesus the Son, well, they don't always seem that warm. When you enter St. Peter's in Rome and look to your right, when you see Michelangelo's Pietà, you see a beautiful piece of sculpture. But you see a mother that knows every mother's worst pain. You see someone that can understand you depicted there, that knows how you feel. And you know, I think we see all of that in every mother. In unity, We have always seen motherhood as the model of divine love. From the very beginning. In the first chapter of the very first book we ever published, this is a facsimile of it, Lessons of Truth, published in the 1890s, in the very first chapter, Katie, well, in the beginning, explains her profound feeling for the love of a mother. Referring to the first epistle of John, she writes, God is love. But she goes on, but we cannot see love or grasp any comprehension of what it is, except as love is clothed in a body, is expressed through a human being. All the love there is in the universe is God. The love between husband and wife, parents and children, is just the least little bit of God as love pushed forth into visible form or manifestation. In other words, the way Katie sees it, the love between parents and children, husbands and wives, that's a little bit of divine love pushed into manifestation. But she goes on, and a mother's love, so infinitely tender, so unfailing, well, that's the same love only manifest in a greater degree through the mother. The way Emily Cady felt about it, the love of a mother is the greatest expression of love in this life experience. And why is that true? Well, Unity's co-founder Charles Fillmore explained it this way. He said, one reason at least mother love is so important is mother love is as strong as life itself and will make every sacrifice to protect its offspring. You know, that's not just true of us. That's true throughout the animal kingdom. A mother bird will do almost anything to protect her nest. There's a kind of bird, for instance, we get one or two of them here in our parking lot almost every summer. And I can't remember the name of the species of bird, but they are particular bird brains, I think, because they make their nests on the ground. But if you go up to where you can figure out the nest is, the mother bird will do everything. She'll lay down on the parking lot and pretend to be dead. She'll attack you. She'll do anything she can think of to get you to stay away from her nest. And that's true of all the birds and beasts and pretty much uniformly throughout the animal kingdom. The mother will protect its cub, its child, its chick without reservation. And that is certainly true in the human family. And Fillmore said, this wholehearted, self-sacrificing aspect of love indicates a spirit deeper and stronger than animal or human. We are forced to admit it is divine. And for this reason, mother love is exalted to first place in our analysis of great passion. Charles Fillmore identified mother love, the ideal of motherhood, with a sympathetic, comforting, forgiving, and compassionate side of God. And if we go on in Lessons of Truth, we learn a little more about why we call God Father, Mother. Remember, first chapter, first book, she goes on, God is both principle and person. In other words, both law and this personal love connection. As creative underlying cause of all things, God is principle, impersonal. As expressed in each individual, God becomes personal to that one, a personal, loving, all-giving father, mother. That's the first reference we know to father, mother, God. And she goes on in a later chapter. It is as though infinite wisdom and power, who is creator, upholder, father, outside, becomes transformed into infinite love, which is mother, with all the warmth and tender helpfulness with which that word implies when God becomes focalized within. Every pure metaphysician either has or must in future reach this place, the place where God as cold principle alone will not suffice any more than in the past God as personality alone could wholly satisfy. There will come moments when the human heart is so suddenly struck as to paralyze it, and for the moment, make it impossible to, with strained effort, try to think right thoughts, as we often try to in unity. At such times, there will come but little comfort from the idea that this suffering comes as the result of my wrong thinking, but God, my Father, takes no cognizance of it. I must work it out unaided and alone somehow. Just here, we must have, and we do have, the personal motherhood of God, which is not called principle any more than your love for your child is called principle. I would not make God principle less, but God person more. Your Lord's, the Father in you's whole business is to personally care for you, to love you with an everlasting love, to note your slightest cry and rescue you. God, Father, Mother, is a present help in time of trouble. And that is how we should think of God. And I think that's how our mothers helped us understand love, which is God. Because what we learned in our relationships from our mothers and from our fathers was different, wasn't it? At least in my generation. Those of us who grew up in the 40s and 50s, or earlier at least, and I think it's still true today, we saw a very clear distinction between moms and dads. In my day, in my childhood, moms pretty much all stayed at home, which was not to say we didn't have working moms. Oh, mom worked all right. Well, because, for instance, in my day, at least most of my childhood, my mom didn't have a job outside of the home, but she had jobs inside the home you don't have today. For instance, just little things. Let's look at the wash. The washing machines we had didn't have a spin cycle. What they had were these two rollers and a crank. And you would, after the clothes were washed, you'd take them, you'd feed them through these rollers. I remember my sister was scared to death she was going to get her hand in that thing. You'd kind of feed them through, and the water would run out, make kind of a mess. Then mom would put the laundry in a basket and take it to our cutting-edge solar-powered clothes dryer. She'd hang it up on the clothesline outside. And every once in a while, if it started to rain, you have to run out and pull them all back in the basket for a while and hang them up in the basement. They always smelled kind of musty on those days. Then, after you brought them in, there was no permanent press when I was a kid. The permanent presser was mom. I can, to this day, remember mom would always set up the ironing board in the kitchen. That's where we had the radio, because that's where we'd listen to Harry Carey broadcast the Cardinals games. We didn't have a TV, but even if we had one, you didn't get Cardinals games on TV. And Mom would be in the kitchen, she'd have her soap operas on the radio. She'd have this old vest, this old glass vest soda bottle. And it had this cork in it that had kind of a sprinkler head, she'd fill up with water, and she'd water the laundry. And she'd press it with the iron, and then she'd fold it and press it, sprinkle it a little more, put it on the kitchen table and start with the next piece. Finally, take it to the bedroom, put it all away, at least once the soap opera was over. Other kinds of washing. The only dishwasher Mom had was my sister and me, and we weren't always that easy to find. Because, I mean, as soon as it was over, we knew what was coming. Didn't have any frozen food to speak of, because what would be the point? The freezer was smaller than a shoebox, and as it would frost up, as the old ones did, it just kept getting littler and littler until you could just barely get that ice cube tray in. So Mom had to go to the market or send me with the grocery list pinned to my coat when I was a little kid, up to the corner almost every day to get something. Now, Mom worked all right. And actually, today's moms give real meaning to father, mother, because so many of them have two jobs. They have to go out to work somewhere like Dad, and then they have to come home and still do the lion's share of the housework. Because I'm not saying we're just pretending, but us guys, we're really not much good at housework. Now, I'm not saying it's a conspiracy. I'm not saying we just do that so that you all say, oh, let me do it. I'm not saying we do that on purpose. I know you think we might be. It's just like genetic or something. I don't know. But Mom's, well, guys, I'm trying. What can I say? But moms still end up doing, in most families, the lion's share of the housework after they go out and work. So if anything, they may have a few more labor-saving devices and a bigger freezer, but they're working even harder. Now they've got two jobs, at least. Now, of course, Dad worked too. He worked long and hard, but here's the difference. Dad didn't work at home. Most of us, Dad, went off somewhere else to work. We never saw where Dad worked. We were told, Dad, your dad's tired. He's been working hard for you. He's been working hard to provide for you. But you never saw what he did. You never saw where he did it. And he might have worked long hours, whether he was starting his own business like my dad, or working somewhere in a factory, or on the road as a salesman. Whatever our dads did, we didn't have a real clear idea of what it was. My dad, he'd often get home late. Many times when I was little, so late, my sister and I were about ready for bed before he walked in the door. And if he did make it when dinner was only a little cold, I don't think the man ever ate a hot meal his whole life, but if he did make it even when dinner was just a little cold, he was just a little bit late. Well, after dinner, he'd immediately go to the dining room because we were one of those German families where we had a living room and dining room that was no man's land. Those were for company. The couch was hermetically sealed in plastic. In fact, that couch may still exist in its original form somewhere. It had, and boy, if you sat in it long enough, you'd just sweat. But it didn't matter, because Mom never let you go in there, because that was only for company, and it seemed like anybody we ever had over didn't qualify. Well, they're not company, they're relatives, so they sat in the kitchen with us. The only thing we did with the living room and dining room was Dad would go in the dining room, and he'd spread out his blueprints, and he'd spread out his tablets of paper, and his bid sheets, and he'd get out his slide rule, and my sister and I were told, leave your dad alone, he's working. So we'd retreat to the spare room and listen to the radio, or later watch our little TV set. And try not to bother Dad because he was busy. And he was busy. But don't you see how those two forms of love do kind of fit in? as a human form of divine love and divine law. The way Dad worked behind the scenes, somewhere we couldn't see, well, that is a wonderful image of the transcendent Father aspect of God working above and beyond this earthly realm. But while Mother worked hard, she worked at home, didn't she? We saw what Mom did, and it had a direct effect in our life. Mom's work was to get us up in the morning, to lay our clothes out, to make sure they were clean for us, to fix our breakfast, to pack our lunch, to be there when we got home from school because, well, actually, in my day, nobody's mom on my block had a car. So, Mom, that's why Mom was always home. She didn't have any way to get away. But Mom was the one that was there. You saw what she did. And when you were sick, who was there to tend to you? When you had a skin knee, who was there to put the iodine on it and hug you and tell you it was only going to burn for a little while? When you were afraid, who was there to hug you? When you needed somebody who, although busy, was never too busy for you? Well, for most of us, it was Mom. So our moms really did introduce us to this understanding of a love that's immediate, of the imminent maternal aspect of the deity. Our moms were the human channels through which we came into this life, our door into this world. They were the ones who from infancy nursed and fed and dressed and bathed and comforted us. They were the ones who changed our diapers. That's another thing dads tend to be. Now, I will say that never bothered me, but I have heard from so many guys, oh, how can you do that? It's just poop. You know, it's, and when they're little, they mostly drink milk. It doesn't even smell that bad. These are obviously not guys that have ever had to muck out a barn. Diapers are better, trust me. Much better. But Mom was the one that learned to make us feel protected and comforted and loved. Now, I have to say, I was really fortunate. I was blessed with a warm, wonderful, really funny mom. My mom was very humorous. My mom was kind of to me, she seemed like a combination of June Cleaver and Leave It to Beaver and Lucy Ricardo and I Love Lucy. And a little more Lucy than June, frankly. My mom had a hard life. She had dropped out of school when she was 12. When her dad died, go to work. She was not blessed with robust health. On the contrary, she knew poverty in her youth. She knew a lot of struggles, but she could always make a joke. She was happy. She always had a smile on her face. And my only regret about my mom was she wasn't with my sister and I as long as we would have liked. And I'm not saying my mom was perfect. God alone is perfect. And I certainly was rarely, if ever, a perfect son. But I have to say, if you weren't as fortunate in your mother as I was, I wish you had been. And I think most of you were. And if you weren't, I think you did your best to be the kind of mom you wanted to have. And I'll say this for myself. Whenever I think about love, I can't read the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. I can't read the 4th chapter of 1 John and think about love abstractly. I can't think about love without two images coming to mind. My mom, who first introduced me to love, and my wife, Faye, who is the only other one that has touched me in that same way. Every time I think about love, I see the two of them, just like that. Can't help it. God is love. That's true. But Mom, for most of us, Mom is the one who showed us more than anyone else what love is. So for all of our moms, those who are with us today, here in this room, and all those moms we wish could be physically with us today here in this room, we celebrate you for all the things you did for us, for all the clothes you ironed, all the times you picked us up from school, all the hours you kissed, and boogeymen you made go away by giving us a hug. But we also thank you for all you did for us spiritually. Because for all the lessons we learned in this life about the true nature of God and the true nature of love, the most important ones probably weren't ones we learned in Sunday school or church. Moms, they were the ones we learned from you. So indeed, happy Mother's Day. Let's pray. Let's close our eyes and open our minds to that Father God that is with us always. And our hearts to that immanent mother aspect of God that is divine love. And Father, Mother, God, we do know that your goodness is the only presence and power at work in our lives. There's only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God the good, omnipotent. Together, there's only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God the good, omnipotent, and so it is.